Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear, it never is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
All right, here we go. Another episode of the Radically Loved podcast. This is Tessa. I'm so excited to welcome back Dr. Nejwa Zavian to the podcast. We had the pleasure of having Dr. Zavian on the podcast last year. I think it was around July. It was episode 513. We got to discuss the audiobook Conversations on Letting Go, which I highly recommend. It's such an amazing audiobook. It's told from the lens of many different voices, and it's almost like a Q&A with, it's like a therapy session with Dr. Zavian, and it's so, so helpful. I mean, I've been in therapy since I was a little one, and I found that book being like a real catalyst for change in my adult life. So thank you for writing it. Thank you for sharing it with us. And congrats on your new book. Would you mind holding up your new book? I just have the digital version, so I don't get to show it.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for talking about Conversations on Letting Go. That project was actually one of the most interactive ones I've ever done because the questions that I answered in the audiobook were directly by people who've read my work, who are interested in learning how to let go of several things in life. And so I took in all the questions and identified the five big themes of what people look to let go of, and just sat in the studio and spoke as if I'm speaking to somebody and we're having tea or coffee. So that was such a great audiobook for me to work on. And I think working on it prepared me for the level of vulnerability that I ended up putting in The Only Constant, because even though I think most people who are aware of me became aware of me either through Welcome Home, which was the last paperback, I guess, that I wrote, not just an audiobook original. And they got to learn a lot about my story and about what it is that got me to a point in my life where I realized that the biggest mistake that we do is that we build our homes in other people. I was very open, but there were still a lot of things that I didn't talk about, not because I was like, oh, I better not talk about this because if it's exposed, you know, people are going to judge me. It wasn't that. I think there was still a level of trying to protect certain stories about myself because I wasn't prepared to talk about them. But when the time came close for me to write The Only Constant, I was at a point in my life where things just that I thought were so important, and maybe not necessarily on a logical level that I thought that they were important, but more like they held me to in a way where it felt like it was a bond, like that I couldn't break, like people's opinions. You know, we all know people's opinions don't matter, but when it comes to our behavior, we find ourselves trying to modify ourselves to fit into certain environments, or maybe we sometimes gaslight ourselves out of our own experiences so that we're not perceived by others as, oh my God, you're making such a big deal out of nothing. So the time that I wrote The Only Constant, I was at a point in my life where I was extremely centered on the self as opposed to the outer world and how you navigate the outer world. It was more like anytime that you feel that you are being controlled by anything outside of you, instead of looking at this outside thing, let's look within. And I had started doing that in Welcome Home. But in The Only Constant, I wanted the focus to be on how do we give ourselves the tools that we need and the self-compassion and empathy and forgiveness and self-love and everything that we need as we navigate this outer world around us changing, not only as a result of life being this ever-changing thing and people being these ever-changing things, but also as a result of us making different decisions for ourselves, as a result of us changing. I went from somebody who was an incessant people pleaser, somebody who never thought I could be not empathetic or not a quote unquote good person. I always perceived myself as I give people an endless amount of chances and I believe in the goodness of people. And if I'm not like that, then that means I'm not myself. That's how I used to view myself. But then with all the knowledge that I gained, I realized that maybe I don't believe that I can be someone who says no, or maybe I don't believe that I can be someone who sets a boundary or who changes something about myself or about my life, because that's my survival mode. My survival mode tells me I can't be those things, because if I am, I'm not going to survive that. So in The Only Constant, I wanted to equip everybody with the tools that I found very helpful to navigate changes in life that happen to us, things that we don't choose, like getting laid off from a job, losing someone we love, either in a relationship, in a romantic one, a family relationship, a friendship, or losing someone we love to a death. Changes we don't choose, that just they're part of our reality now, and how do we navigate them? And then the second type of change is changes we choose. How do we actually go about making those changes? And changes we need to make in order to live an authentic life. To me, that was the meat of the book, even though all the three themes are very big ones. But in order to live an authentic life, you have to have that hard, honest look at your life and say, what is it that I need to do in order to live a life where in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, when I look back, I say, I lived the best life I could possibly live. And in my view, and I'm sure it's your view as well, the best life possible is the most authentic one.
Yeah. Oh, so much to unpack there. These themes of change. I think it's so interesting what you said about, you know, the change that happens to us as a consequence of the external world that we don't have control over. And the, you know, the time-tested quote unquote cliche that really and truly the only constant in life is change. It's really the only thing that we can't control. We evolve. I mean, that's what we do from birth to death, is we are constantly changing. And so one of those big overarching questions to that to me becomes, then why is change so hard if it is always constantly happening? Why is it so hard for us?
Yes. The first chapter in The Only Constant is, why is change hard? It answers that question. And the very first thing I wrote is, change is hard because we want it to be easy. That's as simple as that. We know what it is that we want to change in our lives. And we know what it is that we need to change in our lives. And when something happens, when a change happens to us that we really don't want, we are very aware of it. But we don't want to actually go through it because we know that it's going to break the reality that we're actually living in. In order to embrace this change or in order to go ahead with it, something within our reality absolutely must change. We want our lives to change, but we don't want to do the things that will cause that change to happen because we are so afraid of the consequences of those changes. We're afraid of the people we might lose. We're afraid of the disappointment we might cause in the people around us perceiving us. We are so afraid of the uncertainty that comes with changing something in our lives. Like, let's say you decide you're going to leave a job that you're really, really unhappy at, or that you know no longer serves whatever passion it is that you have. You're so afraid of, what is it? What if I don't find a new job? Or what if this new job that I got into ends up being the same thing as this one? We have all these questions that control us in a way and that aim to get us to relapse back into the old reality that we have. So change is hard because we want it to be easy, and change is hard because it causes a break in the reality that we live in. And for anybody who's listening to this and thinking, well, yeah, I know that it causes a break in my reality, but how do I actually navigate that? Well, you have to think about it this way. In order for your life to actually change in any way, let's say you're entering a new relationship, let's say you're moving to a new country, whatever the change that you're thinking about is, in order to have that new reality come into your life, the reality that's beneath you, that you're operating on or in or through, absolutely is going to break. Think about it like a house foundation. If you have a certain house, but you want to change this house, you're not going to keep the same rooms and the same design and the same, then it would be the same thing. There's going to have to be some level of demolition. There's going to have to be some level of moving things around. There's going to have to be some level of getting rid of certain things and bringing in new things. That's a more practical, real life example, but that's what happens with life's major changes. And so if you're afraid, for example, that the new reality that you might enter might not be one that you're going to be happy in, tell yourself that's a very valid worry, actually, instead of judging yourself for not being able to overcome that worry. That's very natural. It's your survival that's saying, we don't know what's going to happen. What if we're headed towards danger? So you sit with yourself and you talk to the younger parts of you that are really scared of this new change. And you say, yeah, we're going through something huge. There's going to be huge chaos for a while. We might not know exactly where we're headed or that the result that we're going for is 100% what we want it to be. But that's just the nature of life. We have to trust ourselves in being able to pick up the pieces if things don't work out and try something new. That's why one of the biggest themes that I talk about in The Only Constant, if you remember at the beginning of this, I told you there's a huge emphasis and focus on the self. So one of the biggest things that will help you not only embrace change when it comes to you, or try to radically accept it when it comes to you, but to also choose change, one of the main ingredients is self-trust. And self-trust isn't about trusting that you will always get things right. It's about trusting that when things don't go right, you will be able to make different decisions for yourself and you will be able to redirect. Just like any person in your life who you've ever trusted to any extent to lead you somewhere and they messed up, you give them that compassion and you say, you know what, you're human. You know, you tried. Why don't you give yourself that same level of empathy and compassion and understanding and grace when you mess up?
So the theme of trust and building self-trust is such a major, major topic. And I want to pull on that thread a little bit more because I think it's one thing to say, well, you build self-trust by, you know, trying and failing and doing these things. And it's feels to me like it's very different to have a conversation about building self-trust in theory and then in practice actually doing it in the face of such overwhelming fear and kind of like
analysis paralysis about the outcome of the change you may be making.
I feel like we think of self-trust differently because we think of anything that has to do with ourselves differently. We're usually a lot harder on ourselves than we are on the people in our lives that we love. So think of what it means to you to say that you trust someone that you love. Does it mean that you believe that they're going to be right or they're going to figure things out 100% of the time? Or does it mean that you trust in their ability to be there for you, that you trust in their ability to keep your best interest in mind? Or does it mean that you trust in their ability to hold that space for you when you are going through something that you want to talk about? Trust isn't about looking to the person saying, you absolutely must get everything right all the time. Trust is about understanding that you will always do what's in your best interest, even when things around you don't work in the best way. And I'm going to give an example of this. People who leave relationships, they're usually extremely scared of ending up in a similar situation, or they're extremely scared of not being able to weed out all the red flags as they're moving forward. There's that fear of entering into new relationships, which is why a lot of avoidance happens. And you see people complain about this all the time. Self-trust in an example like that wouldn't be about, okay, so right after you leave this, when you enter into a new thing, you absolutely must get it right. That's not what self-trust is. Self-trust is you might go and meet 50 different new people, and when you realize that this person doesn't align with who I am as a person, or when their values don't align with who I am as a person, or when their patterns, their beliefs, their ways of perceiving life and relationships don't align with mine, I trust that I will be able to say, this is not for me. And it doesn't mean anything about me that this is not for me. And I'm going to move forward to the next thing. That's what self-trust is. But we look at it as, oh, it means that I'm going to be able to figure out immediately when I meet somebody that they are the right person for me. And that's why you hear a lot of the language that's like extremely judgmental self-language and extremely shameful self-language. That's like, what's wrong with me? Why do I always end up in relationships or friendships or whatever it is, or jobs like this? Why is my life always like this? That kind of language comes out of shame and judgment. And there's no shame and judgment in going through that, because that's a result of your patterning. That's not a result of you making a conscious choice to speak to yourself in that way. Those are remnants of past patterns that you've fallen into based on the way that you were raised and conditioned and the environment that you were in, or environments that you were in. So when you catch yourself speaking to yourself in that way, you have to look at yourself with compassion and say, I totally understand why you spoke that way to yourself. And you kind of have to have a dialogue with the younger parts of you that are really, they're trying to protect you. Because if you speak to yourself in that way, you think that's going to protect me from further pain. It's going to protect me from feeling the current pain that I'm going through by maybe finding a fault in myself and focusing on that so that I don't have to feel this pain. So when you speak to yourself and address where that language is coming from, you are proving to yourself that you are trustworthy. There's a huge discrepancy between trusting yourself on a logical level based on what you know. Like, many of us know what self-love is and what self-forgiveness is and what self-compassion is and what doing the best thing for yourself is. And trusting yourself based on going into your body and understanding all the responses that your body has been responding with to your environment, and telling your body, you can trust me. I know the reason you freeze, or you fall into a people-pleasing pattern, or you avoid things, or that you fight. The reason that you fall into all these trauma responses isn't because you actually don't have the strength and courage and power to move certain things. It's the way you think you can avoid danger and survive. And so when you have a conversation with yourself, with your body, you prove to your body that it can trust you with choosing something different this time. Maybe instead of freezing, we speak up for ourselves. And maybe instead of running away, we speak up about our needs or speak up about what it is that hurts us and contemplate that maybe speaking up or expressing my needs, yes, it might cause some people to walk away, but it also might cause my connection with these people to be stronger. I'm not always going to be ruled by my biggest fear, which might be abandonment or disappointing others or being perceived as not good enough or something's wrong with me. I'm not always going to be controlled by that. So a big part of building that self-trust within is showing ourselves that we're not judging our bodies for the choices that they've learned to make over the years that we've lived so far. We're going to understand why our bodies respond in the way that they do and build a strong connection with them of trust, saying, you know what? You've been used to doing that for decades. We can do something different and we will survive it.
Yeah, I think where I want to go next with this then, okay, so you've decided to make this change, you're starting the process of going through it, and you talk about this in the book, it's one of those themes, it's like, okay, now we're going to jump off a ledge, and what now, right? And I know that building that self-trust and kind of falling down and getting back up again is very much a part of it. When you said the thing about thinking about it, you know, when you're choosing to trust a partner in a romantic relationship, the first thing that I thought of was, it's scary to do that for me because of a myriad of reasons, which I'm sure everyone can empathize with, like childhood trauma and being lied to and betrayed before. And the thing that helps me keep going in a relationship where I'm trying to build trust and trust the other with my feelings is this conversation that I have with myself about this too shall pass. And the second part of that is, regardless of the outcome, even if this person hurts me again, the thing that I know to be true and always has been true is that I will always be okay. I will always be okay no matter what. And so what now? I want to continue going down that, like, we've made that decision. We're going down that path. Now, how do we kind of stay the course? Or that sounds a little rigid, but you know what I mean?
You have to understand that you won't stay there. We want to shield ourselves from ever experiencing pain again. And that's why we make these overall statements of, I'll always be okay. And as long as I can believe that, then I'm not going to feel that pain. The key ingredient is to understand that you're not going to stay in the place where you're constantly living through this mantra that this too shall pass. And sometimes you have to go through this for it to pass at some point. And sometimes you have to actually sit with the disappointment that I really trusted someone. I really opened my heart up to them. I really tried to build a connection and a relationship with them and it didn't work out. Like, that's what makes you human. Imagine if that happened and you were just like sitting there in a very stoic space and you say, I'll be okay. This too shall pass. Like, that to me sounds like something that somebody who is very close to being a psychopath would say, because what does it say about what you actually felt about this person that you were with if you didn't feel anything at all? Yes, it might be protective where you're falling into a trauma response of avoidance and saying, I don't want to deal with this. Maybe you're distracting yourself with stuff. But the reason I'm saying this is for the person who's listening. It's not enough to have that mantra. It's not enough to have that belief on a logical level in order to move through life in an authentic way. You actually have to be willing to believe that even as you go through the pain of it and the hurt of it and the betrayal of it and the disappointment of it and the anger of it and whatever emotion it is that bubbles up of it, you will be okay. And you are okay as you're going through it. You have to open up space within you to feel all of those emotions. And as you're going through them, you might be scrolling through your phone and see a TikTok or an Instagram reel or whatever of somebody who just got hurt or betrayed, and they're showing you that they really weren't affected by it at all. And so you start judging yourself and say, why am I hurt so much? When is this pain going to end? It's so important that you give yourself the compassion that you need in that moment and say, wow, you really opened your heart up to that person. You really believed every word that they said. That's very brave of you to do, especially after everything you've been through. Of course you're hurt right now. Yes, be sad, be angry, be upset, be whatever. You have to give yourself that in those moments. That's the only way that you're going to be okay. And over time, it really gives you the resilience. One of the things I talk about in The Only Constant that I'm really proud of is resilience. I used to always think that resilience meant the ability to snap back into the person that you were before that thing happened, that change, that breakup, that layoff, whatever it is. But I've learned to believe that resilience has nothing to do with snapping back into who you were or into your past reality. That actually is impossible. Resilience is about being able to snap forward into the person that you're becoming. It's about your ability to snap forward into the new reality that now encompasses everything that you've been through. So over time, as you allow yourself to be human and to experience all of those emotions, you are going to develop that resilience where the next bad thing that happens, it's not that you don't feel the emotion of it. It's that you are more able to open up an even wider space for yourself and an even safer space for yourself to feel your emotions and to process them and to get through all these other life experiences.
I love that answer. So the next direction I want to go with this, I feel like we've been kind of talking about the scary, hard, challenging pieces of change making. And I love that you include this in the book, and that's the beauty of embracing change. And when we learn to embrace change, what would it look like if we stopped having things happen to us, to making things, the mentality of making things happen for us?
I do address that in The Only Constant, and I say not everything that happens to you actually happens for you, because I've heard people say that before. Like, you have to change your mindset about it. Like, things that happen to you in the grand scheme of your life are happening for you. And I don't agree with that. There's a lot of things that happen to us in our lives that I would never tell somebody that happened for you. If you want to go from a place where you have things happen to you to making things happen for you, you have to accept that it doesn't matter how hard you try to shield yourself from things happening to you, they will. Someone you love will die at some point, and someone you love might walk away at some point, and you never know if you're going to lose the job that you're in, and you never know if somebody's going to really hurt you or betray you. Those things will happen, and it's not strength to say, I'm not going to let that affect me. The best thing to do is to say, I'm not going to define myself by what happens to me. Maybe the part where it's like things happen for me is for me to say, I'm going to detach what happens to me from who I am as a person. Yes, I may have been a victim to some things in my life, but I am not a victim moving forward. My identity isn't that thing that happened that really hurt me or that really broke me or that really changed my life. You can go for things in life, for changes that you want. And like I said, trust yourself as you go through those changes. And you might think to yourself, I'm doing something really huge. I'm making something happen for myself. And you might end up in a worse place than the one that you were already at. So when that happens, you might sit there and say to yourself, well, I tried so hard to make this big thing happen for me, but it ended up not being the right thing. So it doesn't mean that something was wrong with your efforts or that you shouldn't try to make things happen for yourself. It just means that you looked at this as an experience. You actually built the muscle of trying for something new. You tried to make something happen for yourself and it didn't work out, but maybe the next thing you try will. So making things happen for you, I think sometimes means looking at the things that happened to you and detaching them from your identity and saying, you know, that thing happened to me, but it's as a result of somebody making a choice that had absolutely nothing to do with me. And it really hurt. But moving forward, I'm not going to be the person that that happened to. I am who I am. And that's just part of my experience. That's how I would reframe it.
I love that. Okay. So last kind of final question on this. Well, it's a bit of a topic change, but it's a question that Rosie often asks guests. So I'll do it for her. And it's a question about looking back on your younger self. We've been talking a lot about speaking to your childhood self and holding that with loving compassion. So imagine yourself as a 15-year-old girl, you knowing what you know now in your life. And I mean, all of the things that you've done and created and who you are today, what advice would you give her, your 15-year-old self?
I know you thought you knew better at your age, but you really didn't. And you need to stop being so hard on yourself for not being able to change your life. You're only 15, and it's the responsibility of the adults around you to make the right decisions. The wrong decisions that were made for you and to you are not your responsibility and they're not your fault. There is nothing inherently wrong about you that made you deserve exclusion or abandonment or being treated in any bad way. That's what I would say.
Yeah, good advice. And then final question is, where do you like to connect with people most? Where would you point people to connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm very active on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Those are the three biggest platforms, I would say. And if people want to read The Only Constant, they can find it wherever books are sold. I also narrate the audiobook. I know so many people like listening to me. So there you have it. You'll feel like I'm having a therapy session with you, or I'm sitting there having tea or coffee with you. You can basically find me on any platform, and there's so much work out there that you have access to by me.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Najwa. I can attest to that. It really does feel like the best therapy session you've ever had. So please check out the book and all of the prior work of Najwa's. You just can't go wrong.
Thank you. You're
so thank sweet. You so much. Yeah, of course.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.